chatting with a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be if we could talk to the animals, learn all their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea.
If you want to talk to the animals, welcome back to Pet Chat. This is Jacques Doolittle on AM 1180 WFYL. And Pet Chat today welcomes Amanda Enright. She's of Worcester Farms, or Worcester Stables, at ourfarms.com. And before we talk to Amanda, we'd just like to reiterate something we've been talking about in the last couple of shows, and that's if you want to contact us with questions or suggestions of topics, or if maybe you want to be on our show as a guest, you could go to our email address of info@1180wfyl.com, or you could just call me at 610-783-6394. Again, ask questions, make yourself available as a guest, or whatever. So we have Amanda Enright, and welcome, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you as a guest. So you work for Worcester Stables, and tell us a little bit of background of the stables.
I've been over at Worcester Stables for about 8-9 years now. I run their summer camp programs. I teach a ton of different lessons, all ages and ability levels, from beginners to advanced. I also host the jumper series over there, where once a month I host a jumper show. People from all over the area are welcome to come in, as well as the boarders. And then I have my own clientele over there as well.
Now, when you teach the children in these classes, it's like a summer school class where a whole bunch of kids come and you teach them how to ride for the first time and all that?
Usually, if you're a dead beginner and you've never ridden a horse, what I usually do is do a private half hour or an hour with each and every one, so I can get a little feel of your ability level, start you off from the very beginning, make you learn a little bit of the basics of taking care of the horse, all the way through tacking up the horse, as well as actual riding and untacking. So it's a full round program that I run.
Gotcha. Now, do you teach kids, young kids?
I do. I usually say starting around the age of 5, that's when their attention is a little bit better and their muscle ability is a little bit better. And then I have taught and started teaching clients as late as, like, in their 70s.
Right. Now, when you're teaching kids to ride, do you advance them into actual jumping where they have little jumps? And
Yep. We always start off small, and it's to the best of their ability.
Right.
We start with little cross rails all the way up to, I have students that do the high levels that are jumping over 4 foot and competing in the bigger shows.
Okay. Now, when you have these lessons, are there like hour lessons, or are the kids there all day long, or how's that work?
No, usually you come about 15 minutes before your riding lesson. Then you usually do anywhere between a half hour, a 45-minute, or an hour-long lesson, and then you stay another 15 minutes to take care of the horse afterward.
Okay, I see. Now, what about the stables? How did that come about? A little history of that.
Worcester Stables has been around for many, many years now. They used to be one of the top racing thoroughbred breeding farms, and now they've cut back and they're more of the show stables as well.
The thoroughbred breeding?
Yes, before.
Okay.
Yep.
Right.
And now this newer generation that has taken over, we focus on lessons, horse shows, not so much the breeding aspect, but everything else that goes along with riding besides that.
Now, are they all thoroughbreds, or they're a mix now?
Nope, it's a mix now. So we still, few of the lesson horses as well as some of our clients' personal horses are still thoroughbreds, but we have every breed there, including the small ponies for the young children.
Gotcha. Now, as a treat, we have Diane back from her vacation. And hello, Diane.
Hi, Jack. Welcome. thank you so much for welcoming me back. It's been really great. We had a lot of business needs and issues coming up, and I'm sorry I was away for a little while.
No,
it's
you got to do
back.
What you got to do. So tell us a little bit, what kind of activities were you into? Were you working or just strictly on vacation?
I was doing both, actually. We took a vacation to relax, but we also kind of went through some priorities that needed to be done for the business, and
right.
thinking through some strategy and some planning. And when it comes to horses and servicing some of our clients, we realized we needed a Pampered Paws vehicle. So we ended up buying a Jeep.
I saw a little black Jeep.
Yeah.
It's nice looking.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just, you know, things like that where you kind of take a pause. And we took a week and, you know, we went and explored and did some off-roading and some beaching and got some things done at the same time. So
excellent.
We missed you guys. We really did.
Oh, I missed you too. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Amanda, when you work with horses, you said you have a mix of horses. You have some thoroughbreds in there too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. All different ages, all breeds, all sizes, all ability levels.
Are there any particular horses who work better with kids than others?
No, not really. Usually we size up the kids based on their height and put it with an appropriate size of a horse. We wouldn't take a little itty-bitty kid and put it on a huge 17-hand horse.
Now, Arabian horses are shorter, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you have Arabians as well?
We have one mix that's half Arabian, but most of ours, we have a lot of paints. We have a lot of quarter horses, some thoroughbreds, and then a variety of Welsh ponies and mix of half-breed Welshes, things like that.
Gotcha. Now, the stables, I saw a picture, and it looked like you have an inside facility. Do you have, like, both in and out? Or what?
Yes, we have a Worcester Stables. Comes with a huge indoor arena, and actually we have one of the only indoor arenas that's heated in the wintertime. So we ride year-round.
Okay.
We also have a phenomenal with amazing footing outdoor riding ring as well. And across the street from the facility, we have a cross-country jumping arena where it's on the grass and there are various natural obstacles out there.
Is that sort of like the one in Wilmington? What's it called? Winter Tour?
That I'm not familiar with.
It's all grass and it's horse jumping. So right next to the road that goes in, I think it's 52. You see a horse is jumping occasionally, and once a year they have this thing called Winter Tour, and it's races, and they're all, you know, like you see in National Velvet. Where they're jumping over hedges.
It's similar to that. We do have a lot of natural obstacles. We have various box jumps. We have a bank where you're going up and down the jumps. We have a stone wall out there. A variety of different jumps. It's not necessarily
so they'll jump over a stone wall.
Oh yes, yep.
Now, I mean, it's a real stone wall, so if the horse hits it,
yep,
it hurts?
It's not a huge one. It's a smaller stone wall, and then we can put the poles on top.
Right.
So if they do actually hit it, they'll knock a pole off as opposed to the stone wall. But the stone wall itself is probably about 2 feet tall.
Okay. All right. Oh, yeah. Well, still a stone wall, right?
Yep.
Now, do you have events there, so it's not just your students, you're running the like actual race?
Yes, it's not so much a race, it's a hunter jumper. We have hunter jumper events and horse shows that are held multiple times throughout the month. We actually have a schooling hunter show this weekend on Sunday as well, and the riders there are then going to be judged on their riding skills, how the mannerisms of the horses, and how well both rider and horse jump over various fences.
And you'll have, like, middle school kids in certain categories and then maybe college kids or something?
Yep, all ages. We have classes for the beginner riders all the way up to the advanced riders that are jumping a little bit of the higher fences and a little bit more challenging courses.
Gotcha. And when you have your classes, do you have, like, certain number in each class, or you have individual, or both types?
It's both types. Now, for lesson-wise, you can have anywhere with a private lesson, it's just that one child or adult. With a semi-private, it's usually around two or three. And then group, depending on their ability level, if they're more advanced, you can have up to four or five in a group at one time. I have a lot of teenagers that are all friends, and they like to ride together in a big group of around five in each.
Gotcha. Now, I'm from California, and we had a riding group at all the stables in the San Fernando Valley, and we were called the California Rangers. And we had uniforms and epaulets and stripes on our pants, and we even rode in a rose parade, and we did drills on horseback, and we'd go two abreast and four abreast.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And we had equitation and fun things like that. And ours were always, each night we had a different troop. We were called troops. And we had privates up to lieutenants, and from 12-year-olds up to 18-year-olds. And it was a great experience. And so we always had 10 to 20 kids in each group. Now, when you have your lessons, and you have groups up to what size are your biggest groups?
I usually try to not go higher than six, just because when you're doing a lesson, I want to make sure my focus is really on each and every individual student. And me personally, I just personally feel that if it's anything bigger, I can miss things when everyone's going around me.
Okay. And now, is it just you, or do you have assistants helping you out? If you have six people and you're trying to teach something, do you have like one person on a couple, or is it all you?
Nope, it's all me in the ring. I do have some wonderful student assistants that come in and help me in the back area, getting the horses tacked up, helping untack for the ones that aren't able to do it on their own. But in the ring, it's only me.
Now, you don't have that whip to keep them in line, do you?
No, though I do threaten it sometimes.
No, that's great. So what's up? Just to give you a little advertising, what's it cost for like an individual class as opposed to a two-person class or a six-person class?
Usually we stay around the $50 per lesson, and that would be a private lesson, though they can go if the more time you do. If you do a 45-minute, it's $60. If you do an hour, it's $70. However, if you do a group lesson, it's just $50 across the board.
Okay. Now, does your facility accommodate people that want to just come and rent a horse, and they could go and you have like a course out there that they could ride around an hour, or just lessons? And
usually it's just lessons, just because liability wise we like to know what the ability of every rider is so we can match them appropriately with the correct horse. I think if we just let anyone come in, we could have some mix-ups here and there. Gotcha. Based on what people tell you versus how they are actually ride.
All right. Now, Diane, I'm questioned out here for a second, so why don't you help me out? What's some things you got in mind?
Sure. From what I've gained in chatting with Amanda before we came into the studio, some of the knowledge that she has is just amazing. And I just wanted to ask you, how did you even get started in this in the first place?
Actually, what really started me was my parents and my grandfather. He always had a love for horses. He always had his own horse. He started me out with the riding lessons, though my parents always tell me a story. They took me to a local fair, put me on a pony ride when I was about 3 years old, and I would just cry as soon as I got off the horse. All I wanted to do was stay on that pony ride and never get off, so it kind of set the tone for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's kind of funny, because most people cry when they get on the horse.
Yeah.
You cry when you get off.
Yeah.
Were you, did this happen in Pennsylvania, in this area?
This did. It actually happened in Bucks County at a little local farm where I grew up. Where my parents still live, and I just started lessons when I was 5 years old, and soon after I was five, I was fortunate enough my parents bought me a very challenging pony. I never was one of those riders who got handed a pony that was per se made that you could just sit on and just go with it. I always had the ones that always had the problems, always had the challenge, and I just kind of got to hold on and stay on. And if I hit the dirt, get back up, brush myself off, and crawl back on.
What kind of pony was it?
It was a little Welsh quarter horse cross. So it was a mixed breed, and he was jet black, and actually that is what my farm that I live at is named after. It's still after him. It's Black Horse Stables, and ironically, even though I got the horse when I was five and I'm 31 now, I still have my first pony. He's in his 30s, and he's still going strong.
How usually old does a horse
they're kind of like dogs. The smaller they are, the longer they live, and ponies, especially with modern medicine today, they're living easily to their 40s.
Wow. That's,
and is he in good health?
He is living the spoiled, pampered life. Oh, he doesn't get ridden anymore. He just gets lots of grass, lots of treats, and lots of grooming.
That's amazing. Yesterday, we met a new client, and we're with Pampered Paws Pet Care PA, and we were out and about doing a meet and greet, and we met a new client, and she takes her horse everywhere. And it was just so nice to see somebody who's had this relationship. Her horse is only 10. I think she's had it since it was 2 months old. And they have such a connection, such an energy together. And no matter how many people were around the horse, he followed everywhere that mom went.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes him to the beach. She takes him to Valley Forge Park and everywhere. And I didn't realize, you know, you can actually, you can just do that. You can be diverse and take...
Oh, yes.
About.
Yep. I've actually taken a few of my horses to Island State Park over in New Jersey on their off season, and you're allowed to ride on the beach over there. And it's just a wonderful experience. And I've also done the Bucks County Horse Park, the Valley Forge. I love trail riding just as much as I love horse showing and riding in the ring.
In the Valley Forge Park, I've seen people riding around. So are they just on the grass, or do they actually have trails that they're supposed to stay on?
It's a little bit of everything. Valley Forge Park is fortunate. They have so much land. You're kind of able to go wherever you want. So as long as you try to stay off like the biking and the riding trail, or the biking and the running trails. But besides that, you're usually on the grass or cut past through cornfields. There's a little bit of everything over there.
Is there a place to rent horses there or anywhere? Is it all private?
Not that I'm familiar in that area. I know there are some local farms that do trail riding. I'm not as familiar with them. But, you know, I know there is a farm in Bucks County somewhere that you can ride and rent the horse right there and ride into Tyler Park. But I've never done it myself because I've always been fortunate enough to have my own horse.
Right, right. Well, Diane?
Oh, sure. When it comes to your little pony that you've had forever, mm-hmm. What are some of the issues that people have to think about when they first get a horse and they have one for, let's say, 30 years?
What I always tell all my clients who want to jump into horse buying is buying the horse is the cheapest thing you'll ever do. So it's the longevity and the maintenance, and you have to really be committed. You know, you can always sell the horses, but especially when it's your first horse, it's like any pet. It's very hard to get rid of. Hence the reason why I still have my pony that does nothing but enjoys the luxury of being retired. So, but there's a lot of upkeep. There's always vet bills. There is farrier bills, which is the trimming of the feet. And then anything, emergencies arise just like any animal and any child, that they're unexpected. And you always are, once you commit to buying a horse, you're still responsible for all the fees.
And the horses, I imagine, just like a dog, they love you. And
yes.
You groom them, and they can't wait for that apple or that carrot.
Yep.
I see on some movies, they give them square pieces of sugar. Is that bad for them as opposed to carrots and apples?
Not really. As long as you don't give them a whole box of sugar, I think you'll be okay.
Okay. All right, cool.
When it comes to actually getting a horse and then working with the cost of owning a horse, what would you say would be an average cost investment for 6 months to a year?
Well, like I said, horses run various prices. Buying the initial horse is probably the cheapest, but, you know, I've had horses where you can get for a few $100s all the way to horses that I've sold and clients have bought that are in the six figures even.
Wow.
So it's a big range, and along with that depends on what kind of facility you want. A facility like Worcester that has all the different accommodations of the indoor riding ring, the heat, you're going to be spending a little bit more money. The board over at Worcester is very reasonable with all the amenities that they give you at $675 a month, but there are other places that are a little bit less, or there are a lot of places I've seen that you can easily spend up to $1,500 a month if you do full training board and things like that.
Now, when you pay the $675,
mm-hmm.
you get one stall.
Yep.
Now, does that include any hands-on from the people at the stables, or you have to come in and do everything yourself?
No, $675 would be the full care, which means the horses are turned out daily, weather permitting. They're fed twice a day. They're given hay, and they're brought in and out of the field. And that's pretty much it. The responsibility of the rider and the owner is to come in and exercise your horse, brush your horse, and things like that.
Right, the grooming, that's on you.
Right, exactly. Now, there are other places that do offer grooming at another additional cost.
So there's you can turn out your horse individually or as a group. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend? I mean, I know horses get along kind of like, you know, any animal. They'll pick a best buddy.
Right.
And they'll hang out. Do you have, what are some, I guess, some of the criteria for just having a horse that needs to be turned out by itself versus with a group?
A lot of times, if you have a really nice show horse and you're showing every weekend, you don't want to go in with nicks and cuts and blemishes and things like that. So because of that, you want to stick them in a private pen where there are horses around them. They still get the interaction. Just if they, instead of kicking up and playing with each other and kicking their legs up, having the risk of kicking each other, they are just playing along the fence line instead. So it depends on the horse. It depends also. Some horses, though, they do like one or two buddies. Some can't handle the herd situation of more than seven horses. It can just be a little overwhelming to them. So those horses may prefer having buddies all around them without actually having a buddy in their pen instead.
That's great. That's
now,
great.
It's amazing. This is our first segment. It's just about ready to come to an end. Diane and I'd like to give a little shout out for our own companies, and I'll start it up. And I have Soap and Bean Pet Care. And I'm in the King of Prussia area surrounding and the main line. And we do daily care, bonded, licensed, and insured. So we won't sue you if your dog bites us. We do overnights for people that go on maybe long-term two-week, three-week vacations. And they're looking for someone to watch their house as well as their pets. Have all sorts of fun pets from dogs, cats, training birds, to having turtles. And I have a fellow with two fish tanks. One's a saltwater, one's a freshwater, and they're 50-gallon tanks. And you got to keep the pH level on the saltwater tank. And it's fun dealing with all these types of animals. So that's Soap and Bean Pet Care. And reach us on the internet, SOPHNBEAN, petcare.com.
And I'm Diane Kaczynski with Pampered Paws Pet Care, PA, LLC. And we are professional. We do professional pet sitting and daily midday dog walking. We service Chester and Montgomery counties. We're caring. We're trustworthy, pet-centered, service-oriented, pretty much 24/7. We do help with rescues and rescued animals. So if you were to rescue a shelter dog, we offer special packages. We do volunteer. And we work with turtles as well. We actually have two turtles. We've Herbie, our one turtle we've had for 30 years. And we're actually boarding three turtles right now for a client who has gone to Hawaii to get married.
I remember you telling me about Herbie.
Herbie is, she's a cutie pie. And we also work with horses and just about any animal, really, except for, you know, rhinoceroses and just kidding.
Wait a minute. So, you don't deal with rhinoceroses?
No. No, we haven't yet. What? But anyway.
No hippopotamuses?
No. No.
Oh, impossumus.
Oh, I know. So I guess back to that, back to the theme song of the
show.
Oh,
yeah. We'll get back to that theme song in a second.
Yeah.
But again, if you want to call us and contact us at info@1180wfyl.com, you could ask us questions. You could make yourself available as a guest if you would like to just give us topics for upcoming shows. You could do that. You could even call if you'd like to call. We're here. 610-783-6394, and I'd be glad to talk to you, introduce you to Diane, and we'd like to see as many people as we can. So this is Pet Chat, AM 1180, WFYL.
Thank you.
Me, can you speak rhinoceros? I'd say of phosphorus. Can't you? If I conferred with our furry friends, man to animal, think of the amazing repartee.
1, 2, 3. Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, inviting you to join me for Backstage Jazz. I'll spend an hour each week taking you behind the music and into the lives of America's top jazz musicians. Experience live jazz music and connect with the artists through backstage interviews. Join us right here for this season of Backstage Jazz. Broadcasting Saturday afternoon at 4 and streaming Sunday night at 6 on WFYL.
driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
If you like car talk, catch Under the Hood, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 to 7. Exclusively streaming on 1180WFYL.com. Worldwide on your computer or mobile device. Stream Under the Hood this Saturday morning from 6 to 7 at 1180WFYL.com or on your favorite mobile device. Go to our website at 1180WFYL.com to find out more.
Hi friends, Janet Parshall here, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall. I'm excited about partnering with 1180 AM WFYL to bring you a fast-paced conversation every Sunday. As you listen to In the Market, we'll examine major news stories and issues, equipping you to be bold when voicing truth in a confused and chaotic culture. I look forward to engaging my new friends at 1180 AM WFYL every Sunday at 12:05 p.m. on In the Market.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.
Talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals, and they could talk to me. If I consulted with quadrupeds, think what fun we'd have asking over crocodiles for tea. Or maybe lunch with two or three.
Well, we're back. This is Jacques.
And this is Diane.
And welcome to Pet Chat.
Welcome.
We're here with Amanda Enright. She's at Worcester Stables over at Worcester. And it's a great guest. We've learned a lot of stuff about horses and the farms and about the type of people that come for lessons and the like, and we're going to learn a little bit about Amanda here and take it over, Diane.
Yes, now Amanda joined us today, and she's a local horse trainer, a riding instructor, and a professional show rider. And I wanted to know a little bit more about Amanda and how she got to where she is today, because she not only is connected to many counties around the Philadelphia area and many stables and farms, but personally, I just wanted to kind of ask her some questions because we never really get to understand, you know, how she developed into what she is today, because I know a lot of people who really admire her and would like to, you know, kind of follow in your footsteps. So I would like to know, you know, did you go to school and how did you, you know, you started when you were little with your family. Is it your family's influence then?
It was definitely a lot of my family's influence. I know my mother always loved horses, loves all animals. She always supported me, and so did my father. Everyone in the family supported me when it came to horse shows on the weekends. It wasn't just one or two parents there. It was my whole family coming to support and watch and root me on. And I, even when I was younger, when I was a young teen, I would always help my trainer out, training all the what they would consider the difficult ponies and horses, because I was the kid that enjoyed it so much. Even if I hit the ground, I'd bounce right back off, laugh, shake it off, and get back on, do it again. So nothing was too challenging for me. I was fortunate enough to never have a fear of it.
I was going to say that. It sounds like it. And when you were growing up, were your parents always surrounded by people who were taking lessons, or did you rescue? Were you involved with...
Not really so much of the rescue aspect. We always had friends that we always would ride together, and we'd have a group of us that would go and ride at the farm multiple times during the week as much as we could. But rescue-wise, I wasn't actually as familiar with rescuing until I got into my 20s when I rescued my first horse.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm going to go back to that. when you were riding around when you were little, was that near Sheeter Mill Farm in Chester County?
No, that was actually in Bucks County. So I didn't move to the Chester County area until probably about 8 years ago. I grew up in Bucks County. I rode at a variety of farms in Bucks County for a variety of different people. And that's where my family is, which is why I did move back to Bucks County as well.
Oh, that's great. And I know that you did have a little bit to do with some area or one of the farms near Spring City.
Yes. Yep. I ran the barn and was the manager over there, and I lived over there for about 8 years. It was wonderful. It was an apartment actually above the barn. And though it was tiny, it was small, it was a loft apartment, it was just the best experience. I could hear the horses underneath of me. I could also hear if there was any issues or anyone got sick or got stuck in any way. They would definitely be banging on the walls, and I would hear it right up through the floor.
Oh, that is fantastic. And how long did you live in that barn? 8 years?
About 8 years.
That is so
cool.
Yep,
in the apartment. So, and I kept my horse. It's still there, and I used to keep my horse right underneath of me.
Oh, I would love that. Oh my gosh.
Would the horse know you're there?
That I don't know so much. Though when they were making a lot of noise, I occasionally would yell down to them, but it never seemed to help.
So. You have to get up at like 3 a.m. and
yeah,
get down there. And
exactly.
So I guess you probably have some interesting stories about maybe animals that entered the barn in the middle of the night.
A little bit here and there. The cats mainly kept the big animals out, but occasionally you would hear random noises. But by the time I went downstairs, there wasn't anything there. So it was only up to my imagination what really happened.
Yeah, that's great.
Would you find, I mean, is there coyotes or big game like that would come into a farm?
I've never seen that before. Mainly we have a lot of deer at all the farms that I've ever worked at. It's always been the deer, though every place in the area I've heard that people have heard coyotes in the area. I myself have heard them in the distance, but never saw them in person or up close.
How about foxes?
You'll see foxes here and there, but they're so skittish, they stay out of your way as much.
They don't
as,
bother the horses,
no,
right?
No, not at all.
And neither would the deer, I would
no,
imagine.
No, actually my horse used to chase the deer out of the field.
Yeah, it's funny because I was driving by Ryer's Farm on 23 the other day, and there were horses grazing with the deer.
Yep,
it was
they
hilarious.
Don't mind at all. It's not a threat, so they more or less welcome them into their fields.
That's really cool. Now, let's go back to 20 years old. You rescued your first horse.
Yep, around the 20s. I was probably closer to 24, 25 when I rescued the first one. It was just a situation. There was a horse out in the field that was extremely emaciated, and I contacted the owner and said, you know, what's going on with the horse? Do you need help? Is there anything I can do? Tell me what I can do. And she said she just couldn't afford the horse, couldn't afford the upkeep, and said that their feeding program, they kind of fed all at once, and there was about 8 horses in the field at one time. There wasn't much grass. There was a small field. They fed them all at once. So the more aggressive horses got to eat, the ones that were more shy and laid back type would just stay on the sidelines and watch because they knew not to challenge the dominant horse. And yeah. I ended up just taking the horse from it and turning it around and doing some training, getting weight on it. And it's done multiple shows now. And I ended up selling it to one of my clients.
Oh my gosh. So was it, I mean, when you got it, how long did it take for you to kind of break it in as being a regular happy horse from a shy, quiet horse?
It probably took a solid 8 months. And
oh,
then,
that's not bad.
No, not too much to get weight on it and just get some muscle tone on it. But just as soon as you started working, it loves to work. It loves to ride. The whole entire personality brightened up. And then it was probably about a year and a half before it was ready to go into the horse shows and do a little bit more and do a little bit more challenging things. But I think it was just so grateful that I took care of it, took it in, that it's still to this day one of the sweetest horses around.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you get to visit it?
I do.
Oh,
I do.
Cool. I can't believe it went from the field emaciated to being a show horse.
Yep.
That's just amazing.
Oh, yes.
That's really cool. So what were you inspired by Secretariat or the movie or anything like that? Did you ever meet anybody that famous?
No one really famous per se, but nothing really inspired me to stick with the horses. I've just always loved the horses. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I was always the one. I was the barn rat. I stood at the barn and I would stay at the barn day in, day out if they would have let me. I never wanted to leave the barn. And it wasn't even just the riding and the horses. It was taking care of the horses. It was mucking their stalls, giving them water, grooming them every day. Just every part about it, I just enjoyed. There wasn't anything I didn't enjoy.
That's really awesome. I know yesterday I met someone who owns a horse, and they helped our group actually get over the fear of walking behind a horse. Because, you know, you're kind of taught that a lot of people are very nervous, and they think that they're going to get kicked immediately by a horse. You know, I just let the horse know that I was there and going around behind it. But mm-hmm. I think it's just really the person and their energy and letting the horse know. Because horses don't want to go around kicking people.
Exactly. And horses can read energy better than anybody that I know of. I always say, you know, don't tense up when something goes wrong under saddle and you're on the horse. The worst thing to do is tense up, because the horse is going to feel that and immediately think, oh my gosh, the rider's tense. I should be tense too. Something's wrong.
Yeah. Right.
So you want to take that deep breath and just relax on the horse if a problem should ever arise.
One quick question.
Funny you mention that.
I'm sorry.
It's funny you mention that, because somebody that I was talking to yesterday, they went through 8 horses, 8 introductions. And mm-hmm. it really is like dating.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to, you know, if you're going to click or not. And it's kind of scary if you think that you're going to rescue a horse from the West and it arrives and it's not the horse that's meant for you.
Right.
So it really is something that you want to take your time and really investigate and spend time with the animal and make sure you're doing the right thing and committed.
Exactly. I always suggest to all my friends and students or anyone who asks me anything, I always suggest meet the horse, spend time with the horse, even see if you can get the horse on trial for a few weeks, mm-hmm. just to see if you will bond with the horse, if it is the right fit. Because you don't want to invest all this time for it not to be the right fit. It's not fair for the rider or the horse.
And what's really interesting, too, is not only for the human and the horse, but if you have another horse on your property, it needs to bond with that horse.
Exactly. Now, horses, I will say, there's only 2 horses, eventually, even if they have issues in the beginning, they tend to work it out and kind of establish who's in charge, who's not in charge, and who gets to maybe eat the grain first and then something like that.
Like the domineering one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, it's funny to see them. I mean, they're tricky little horses. Like, sometimes you see them going, one will eat, and then if one's a faster eater, the other one will come into the stall and kind of just take the whole stall over and rotate the other one out. So, you know, even as a pet sitter, as a pet care provider, you have to be ready. It's almost like putting a dog in a crate for a few minutes. You have to close the door on one. But then some of the horses know how to open up their own stall doors.
Oh, yeah. Horses are extremely smart. Actually, my pony was notorious for breaking out and breaking everybody else out. So
she would not only open her stall, that she'd go around and open the other stalls?
Yep. Horses are smart. Don't ever underestimate them.
That is really cool. Hey, I had a real quick question. When you're training, are you training on English saddles, Western saddles, both? How does that work?
I've actually done a little bit of everything. So I feel comfortable pretty much doing English or Western. I myself have ridden Western, shown Western, done the barrel racing, done the pole bending. I've roped a cow off a horse. But my true love is the jumping.
Okay.
Anything, give me the higher the fence, the better. So I really like English. That's my main focus, though. I have done Western in the past.
When you go out riding, though, just, you know, casual riding, is that Western?
Actually, yes, because you can't get the comfort of a nice big Western saddle. You have a nice relaxed horse. You go out in the field for a few hours and just want to go run around and go on a nice relaxing trail ride. I always go for my Western saddle first.
And then lastly, when I was in the California Rangers, they always taught us to get on the horse on the left side. And is that just something that our organization taught, or is it a truism that you should always get on the horse on the left side?
That is true. You always want to get the horse, get on the horse from the left side, and that actually stems from when they used to have the artillery and things like that. They would always carry their swords on their left. So if you have to put your left foot up, otherwise you wouldn't have been able to get onto the horse.
Right, and you didn't want the sword to flip over.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay, that's cool.
So what's really neat is how you got started, and you went to school. I love what you did as an education, what you graduated from college with, and I can't believe you even had time for college. tell us a little bit about your career and what was, you know, how the horses and your education, how you graduated with the degree that you have.
So what I ended up going to college for is special education, elementary education. I have a dual major in both of them. I really, honestly, I went to college on the off chance of, for some reason, if the horse business did not work out, I would have something to fall back on. I'm always prepare for the worst mm-hmm. and hope for the best type of person.
Yeah.
So, and when I was in college, I actually rode on the equestrian team in college. So I still always kept up with the horses as well as had my own personal horses on the side. And then, long story short, when I was in college, I went to go look at a horse for sale at a local farm near where I went to college, and it was a warm blood breeding farm. And I really clicked with the owner, and I ended up forming such a relationship with the owner. I ended up helping her out, training the horses, and from her, I learned how to breed the mares and the stallions, foal out the babies, and work from them from the minute they hit the ground to when they were being able to be broke to be ridden.
What's a warm blood breeding farm?
It's a warm blood is a type of breed. Warm bloods are a thicker built as opposed to the thoroughbreds, which are a thinner built. The horses that you see in the Olympics and the show jumping, 9 times out of 10, they're warm bloods. So they're a little bit bigger, they're a little bit more powerful, they have a little bit more substance to them, and they can handle the higher jumps and the bigger obstacles.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's awesome. I just totally had a great question for you, and now I forgot what it was. Oh, no.
Chuck, you interrupted my thought pattern. You scoundrel, you.
No, but I just think it's neat with the education and the horse career. There was another part to it that I was like just dying to know, and I just totally forgot. Oh, nuts.
So when you're in college and you have your degree now,
mm-hmm.
What thought of horse breeding or training did you have while you were in college, or did it sort of mutate after college?
No, it actually was in college that I realized, you know, I wanted to get the degree in education because teaching is a big part of dealing with the horses and the horse business. So when I was in college, I actually decided right then and there when I was about 21 that this is what I wanted to do as a full career, full-time job and start my business. So that's when I really did start my business, was in college. And it just started from just doing about 5 riding lessons a week. And then from there, it was referrals. And then I got hired at a variety of different farms in the area. And honestly, I've been fortunate enough to never actually have to apply for a job. It's just all been word of mouth, all been referrals. And when I landed, my biggest account is my Worcester account, which is I also got asked to coach the LaSalle University and the Gwynedd Mercy University equestrian teams there. And through that, I give lessons to those colleges right at the farm. And then we compete on the weekends with a variety of other colleges in our region and zone.
That's what I was going to ask. You said equestrian class. Mm-hmm. So colleges do have equestrian classes?
Equestrian teams. Yep. Just like any other sports teams. When I was in college, I rode on my college equestrian team, which is kind of why I fell into loving that type of program.
Right, right.
The college team is nice because you don't have to own your own show horse. You go to a horse show, you pick a horse out of a hat type of situation. You don't get to know anything really about the horse or try it out first. You get on the horse, you get shoved into the ring, and you're being judged right away. You have to figure it out as soon as you sit, put your foot in that stirrup.
Now, when you come to class, is it typical college class, an hour, 2 hour? How are the classes set up when you're in college?
In college, for the equestrian team, it's not really classes. It's just a weekly lesson. So it's just like we do at the other farms. You just show up for a lesson. It can be a private or a group. And then you just go from there and you learn whatever your instructor at the time is teaching you.
And based on how well you do. You get an A, a B, a C, whatever?
It's not graded. It's more you when you move on from the college team and you are riding well enough to show in the appropriate level classes within the class, there's probably between 6 and 10 riders per class, and then you're all being judged. And so the judge actually decides what ribbon you go home with.
So each college has their own barn, they have their own horses.
Yes, not necessarily own horses. Like the LaSalle University and the Gwen and Mercy University ride out of Worcester, and they use my lesson horses as well as the barn's lesson horses.
Got it. Interesting. All this
it
stuff.
Is. And back to how many? I mean, back to your successful career and working at various barns. If you were to kind of say out loud how many clients you have total today. How many clients would you, could you
usually
answer that?
It fluctuates depending on the season, but right now I'm giving about 100 lessons a week, plus or minus depending on my horse show schedule that weekend.
Oh my gosh.
That's a lot of lessons.
You being, and I know you had an early start this morning. I thought I had an early start. I've been driving all day.
And you're going back to work, right?
Yep, this is just my quick break here.
And I'm trying to squeeze into in your schedule for a lesson, too, and meet a horse, actually. And we'll talk about that later, maybe on another show. But what is the average age of somebody off the street who wants to have a lesson?
Usually you get a lot of the kids that come that have gone to the fairs, that like the horses, and they always wanted to try it. So you're looking around, I would say 7, 8, 9-year-olds. However, a lot of times it's hit or miss. Sometimes they realize after a year, you know, this isn't what they want to do. They want to try the soccer. They want to try the baseball and the softball and things like that. So, and I totally understand that. Sometimes the horseback riding is not for them. But then I have other clients that start at 6 and they're now in their 20s still going.
That's awesome. Now, do you have a lot of people in their 30s and 40s that come out and just really
I do. Maybe not ones that I necessarily started as a young rider, but I have a ton of clientele that range all over the age range. There isn't a specific age range that I have more of per se versus another age range. It's across the board. I have my adult groups that always ride with me once a week that it's strictly, I would say, 40 and over. Then I have other riders that I have the teens that ride together. I have my young adults that I call that ride together. So it varies.
Now, speaking of your young adults, you mentioned during the break sort of a, I don't know if it's funny, amusing, some would say scary situation with a kid on a horse that sort of went amok.
Yes. With my profession, you see a little bit of everything. I know I had a student who was about 10 years old and just learning how to ride and walk, trot, and cantering, still definitely considered a beginner, never jumped a fence before, and was cantering around, just didn't really steer that well. And next thing you know, the horse decides to jump out of the ring with my student on him. And this, of course, it was going up a hill, so the rider kind of rolled off the side while laughing hysterically the whole entire time, with the parents standing on the side with their jaws dropped because they've never seen the horse jump before, nor have they ever seen their child jump before
So the parents were horrified,
right?
Not your student.
No,
rider.
Not at all. My student,
she was laughing.
Exactly. And we still, to this day, she's still my student. That's probably been about 5 years ago, and we still laugh about that. And that's when she realized that, you know what, she really does like jumping. Now it's time to jump and stay on the horse.
And it just happened so fast, she probably didn't even know what happened.
Exactly. She had no idea it was coming. Never in a million years did we think that this pony of hers was going to jump out of the ring.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yesterday I was with somebody who they always boarded their horse, and they had a bucket list, and one of the items in their bucket list was to be able to have their own farm and have their horses in their backyard. And she finally made this dream come true. Do you actually go to people's properties and help them with their horses once they get acclimated to the new land and a new property and give lessons?
I do. I was always one of the niche in my business is that I'm a traveling trainer.
Oh, wow.
I work out of a farm in Chester County. I have a farm in Montgomery County, and I actually have 3 farms in Bucks County as well. And I also have a bunch of private clients throughout all those areas that I just go to their house and just give them personally riding lessons or train their horses for them.
So what would you consider a vacation, going to the Island State Park?
Pretty much. I don't have too much time for vacation, so when I do, it's usually still involving the horses.
So tell me about the Island State Park, because this one friend of mine, which I thought was so cool, she takes her horse in a trailer and they go and explore things. I mean, it's so different than anyone I've ever known. They go to Assateague Island, they go to Chincoteague Island, they go to Valley Forge Park. It's almost like taking your dog on vacation. She takes her horse and she does things around her horse and their activities. With the Island State Park, are you able to camp there? Do you go with groups or individuals?
Usually it's more or less just a day trip. It's not that far away. It's right over in New Jersey. You can only go on there during the off season. So it's more or less you trailer your horse in. You spend as long as you want. The hours are pretty open-ended. We usually go for a nice four-hour ride and just go up and down, galloping up and down the water, and then let them play in the ocean and things like that.
That must be awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, we were in Cape Cod a few years ago on Sandy Neck Beach.
Okay.
And there were two gals riding their horses. I think it was bareback. It was unbelievable. And the horses were going into the water, and one horse was very experienced with the ocean and playing. The other one wanted to drink the water. And everybody that saw them, we were just all mesmerized by it. But it was just funny because a group of single men in a Jeep were chasing the women down with fresh water to get to the horse. But it was just adorable. It was really cool to see that. So I really admire, you know, what you're doing and all the lessons that you're giving folks out there. And if you want to really, I mean, for somebody like me who wants to start up again a little later in life, what would you recommend as like some of the first steps that I could take? Like which website, which farm would you be at, and how could we contact you?
What I would say is, depending on where you live, I could find a farm, whichever is the closest to where you live. And the first thing is to get you right back on the horse. And then just start you off with some regular lessons, and just so you can get a feel of it and be more comfortable with it. And then some people want to jump into buying a horse or rescuing a horse, and that's up to the client. I'm not one to always push saying that you have to buy a horse. I'm one that says whatever you are financially able and willing to do, I will work with you and mm-hmm. help you just keep improving.
Mm-hmm. I know. I really admire your courage, too, because, I mean, we were just talking about a horse that you know that has, you know, it might have a little issue here or there, and it's just you need to find the right person with the right energy to be able to handle it.
Yes.
And what really happens to us sometimes when we're with the client is when we're pet sitting, when the human parents leave, the animals act differently.
Yes.
And you'll have clients who say, oh, my dog will stay in the yard. You never have to use a leash. Well, we know always to use a leash because
yep.
a deer will run by, a cat will run by, something will happen. When you're with animals, some of the things that you see that people just don't talk about or take for granted, sometimes you are going to see horses that want to jump a little bit, or some of the things that you've done, like for instance with Tigger, maybe for instance, you could talk about maybe what he's doing and how to walk through that and how to remain kind of calm, I guess.
Well, he's one of those horses that just has some sort of, I don't know if it's a trust issue or if it's a learned behavior issue when you saddle him up. He's one of those horses that just gets a little bit nervous. And so mm-hmm. instead of fighting him through it, you learn a way to get to your same end result while moving him around at the same time. So that kind of while he's moving around, it alleviates the nervousness because he's not thinking about exactly what you're doing.
It's a distraction technique
exactly.
like I use with dogs.
Yep, that's
a
exactly
fear aggression.
It.
So yep. I'll do different things with dogs to let, you know, me get closer to them and realize it's okay, it's safe.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. It's just, you know, 1,000 more pounds.
Oh, that's exactly. It's a little bit bigger than the dogs.
Yeah, 2,000.
Well, believe it or not, we are almost done. So, Amanda, why don't you just give a little shout out, a little ad for your business?
Okay. Well, I'm Amanda Enright. I do lessons. I do training. I ride professionally. You can find me pretty much if you Google my name. There's multiple farms that I train out of that will come up. So just give me a call or send me an email, and I would love to talk to you a little bit more about riding. And if you need a horse, I also do a bunch of horse sales as well.
And for questions to us at Pet Chat, again, you could just go to info@1180wfyl.com. And for the last couple seconds, actually. This is Jacques Doolittle with Soap and Bean Pet Care.
And this is Diane Kaczynski with Pampered Paws Pet Care PA. Thank you for joining us today.
Yes, it's been a pleasure, and thank you, Amanda.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Can't you? If I conferred with our furry friends, man to animal, think of the amazing repartee. If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals.